Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everybody, welcome to Literary Disco on Lit Hub Radio, episode 173, Bookshelf Revisit, Summer 2020. Today we'll do an old-fashioned bookshelf revisit, wherein each of us take a volume down from our shelves and bring it up for discussion. This is Literary Disco, the last book club you'll ever need. We're Todd, Julia, and Ryder, three old friends who love to read, debate, and sometimes even agree. I am actor and filmmaker Ryder Strong, joining me, as always, our novelist and critic, Todd Goldberg, and essayist and radio personality, Julia Pistel. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
What's going on?
Same old, same old.
Had a Rice Krispie treat for breakfast today.
I feel like, okay, here's my pandemic snack story of the week. Greg has been ordering stuff from Costco, which we are always Costco people, but now he's getting, like, experimental, which is horrible. You have to know and physically see what you're going to buy. So he heard me mention once several years ago that, like, when I was a kid, we ate Pop-Tarts for breakfast. I haven't had a Pop-Tart in, like, a long time, 20 years. He ordered Pop-Tarts from Costco. It is the worst decision anyone has ever made. I now have,
because they're delicious,
48 Pop-Tarts.
Oh my God.
Of course, because it's Costco size.
Right. Exactly. Right. Horrible. Yeah, it's a big problem. I'll put a picture on our Facebook page.
What flavor?
Okay. Strawberry and cinnamon brown sugar. They're both
good.
That's it.
Those are the only two flavors.
That's
it.
Right. So it's okay.
Don't deviate. Don't deviate from that.
No.
I think I've only had cold Pop-Tarts. I don't think I've ever had, like, yeah, and this has been 20, 30 years.
It's been a long time since I've had a Pop-Tart, too. Like, Pop-Tarts used to be a key part of my diet. Like, up until age 40, I would say that the food item I'd eaten the most in my life was the Pop-Tart. And then on or about my 40th birthday, I went to the doctor, figuring, like, I should maybe find out about what I got going on inside.
Pop-Tarts,
and the doctor was like,
"Yeah."
The doctor was like, "You're gonna die."
He took one look at you and he was like, "You are 80% Pop-Tart."
And that
this
was
a problem.
Like, that was the end of my Pop-Tart era. But it's funny that you should mention Pop-Tarts again, because my sister and my brother, actually both sisters and my brother, also, like, when they went for their first pandemic shopping, like, you know, March 15th or whatever, they all bought like 36 Pop-Tarts.
Oh, no.
And
it's too many Pop-Tarts.
It's total comfort food.
Right.
The brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart is, or was, I don't know if it still remains this, because I'm sure they've altered the recipe some, was the perfect food.
I don't think it's
cold,
changed.
You could eat it hot. It could be breakfast. It could be lunch. It could be dinner. It could be a midnight snack. It's the perfect food.
So they've rebranded little bit. On the side of the box, it says, enjoy them any way you want. And it's like toasted, frozen, still in the foil. And then I forgot what the last
frozen
one was. And I was like, what the hell? This is crazy. But yeah.
Frozen?
I know.
I've never had a frozen Pop-Tart.
Sorry, I'm waking the demon here, I'm sure.
I think it's super interesting that people are going back to like comfort foods, because I've definitely, you know, that's been happening in my house. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, I've noticed I've gone through distinct phases of music too. And movies, mm-hmm. like a lot of right when the pandemic started, whenever I would watch a movie with my son, it was an 80s fantasy movie. And I was like clearly taking him on a tour of like my favorite film from when I was 10 years old or, you know, under 10 years old. And it's and it was like so comforting in a way. And then music, too. Like I've gone through, like, for whatever reason, like early aughts, like, you know, music that I listened to when I lived in New York when I was 20 became like really important. Like all these artists I never listened to anymore were suddenly like back in my life. And I was all these old songs. It's super fascinating. Like,
yeah. Well, I think there's something to be said for easing into the comfort of something that requires absolutely no thought or anticipation, you know?
Right. Right.
Like all of a sudden, like, oh, that hits that dopamine and I feel good. Yep. For four minutes without anything else. So I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And I mean, it's also why I think, like, on a larger level, like, I'm just wearing basketball shorts and t-shirts every single day of my life. Like, I can't imagine putting on a pair of jeans.
See, I feel like that I can't do. I am wearing boots and jeans and clothes every day. And dude, belt. Like, I cannot go without
it. I haven't worn shoes since March.
Oh, that's my God. Are you not even going on a walk?
No, when I'm exercising, I wear shoes. But at home, nope.
Not at all. Oh, see, that drives me crazy. So you're taking Zoom meetings. You're doing, like, right now. Mm-hmm. You are not wearing shoes.
No, I'm not wearing shoes. No, fuck no.
See, I can't. I mean, Alex has made fun of me because I can't write without wearing shoes, which she thinks is ridiculous. But I'm like, no. If I'm sitting if I'm at the job, if I'm at my job, I need to have shoes on. Like,
I have.
Gross. We just saw Todd's feet.
In general, I'm pretty dirty, but I did recently notice. So we've been doing like tons of hiking and going out to empty beaches and stuff. I noticed that I have totally become one of those people who thinks their outside clothes are dirty. I'm like, I get home and I like.
What does that mean?
Want to change. Okay, so, Ryder, there's, like, a whole category of people who, like, when they get home, they change into all fresh clothes because the outside is covered in dirt and stuff. And wow. I've converted. Like, I just...
It's not, like, a germ thing? It's not, like, a coronavirus?
For me, no. It's more about just, like, the difference between home and not home is now so black and white. You know, it's like, we're out. I am not going out again. Like, and we always go out in the morning as opposed to the afternoon. So usually I'm in my basically pajamas by like 11 o'clock in the morning. Like, I've been up and done my thing. And then by 11 a.m., PJ pants.
That's amazing.
So like Wendy has three outfits. She's got the pajamas that she wears from 6 p.m. until 10 a.m. the next morning. Or sometimes noon. Then she puts on, then if she works out, which she does just about every day, she has the workout outfit. And then she changes from the workout outfit into then the loungewear. And the loungewear is worn from approximately noon until 6. And then at 6, she puts on the pajamas again. So it's like three full outfits. What I do is I wake up, and if I'm exercising in the morning, then I wear like whatever t-shirt I woke up in and exercise in that. If I'm going to exercise in the evening, then I have to change clothes. But at no point during this time am I wearing pants. At no point.
Bizarre.
But so like I've had to do a bunch of events and stuff, public events, because through UC Riverside, we still have a full slate of stuff that we're doing online. So talks and conversations and film screenings and all kinds of stuff. And so what I do for that is I will put on a nice shirt, and instead of the basketball shorts that I would normally wear, I put on a regular pair of shorts in case I don't know what would happen where they'd see my shorts. I don't want them to see me in my disgusting no underwear basketball shorts. I want them to presume I'm wearing some sort of support garment beneath the Banana Republic shorts that I'm wearing.
Wow.
It's a whole system.
That was a deep dive, man.
But at no point am I wearing pants. No point.
So what part of this comfort revisit?
Very good.
Let's make this transition to our bookshelves. And what are you guys thinking about? What are you guys reading or having or going back on what you have read besides Middlemarch, which we are still going through? Are you guys reading anything, or is there something you want to take down from your bookshelf? Who wants to go first?
I've read a couple new things this week for events. I'm in the thick of my academic year. So I have 8,000 theses to read, which I'm doing right now as well. So if you're a student of mine, you're listening to it. That's all I'm doing is I'm reading your work. I have no free time. If you see me online, I'm just taking a moment off from reading your work, and then you'll get your notes pretty soon. real soon. So I've read two really completely different books in the last week that are worth your time. The first is an absolutely fascinating fucking book. It's not appropriate necessarily for our show, but if you are feeling anything about the world and life, it is an interesting book to read. It is a book called Death, Immortality, and Meaning in Life by the philosopher John Martin Fisher. And John Fisher received a $12 million grant to study immortality a few years ago. And he has spent about the last 7 years studying immortality, both from a philosophical and a scientific background. And this book details death, immortality, and meaning in life in both a philosophical way and then through actual study. So there's a huge, big section on near-death experiences and how near-death experiences change depending upon where in the world you are. So in Western culture, a near-death experience often features someone being in a long tunnel and then being greeted at the end of the tunnel by their relatives, and they, you know, they fly around and do stuff. In Japan, however, the near-death experience takes place almost universally in a rock garden and walking around a rock garden with a dead relative. And it turns out that near-death experiences changed depending upon what the cultural cliche of a near-death experience is.
Shocking to me.
But there's something in this book that I actually talked about in an essay that came out this week. I wrote an essay that I got a very nice grant for that was to reflect basically the times that we're living in. And if you haven't seen it, I'll put it up on our Literary Disco page. But it was an essay that I wrote called The Outside In, and it's supposed to reflect sort of what it's like to be alive in this time. And in the essay, I talked a bit about, I don't think I mentioned this on the show, I had a weird experience where I was at home a couple weeks into this, and I looked up and there was a man standing in our living room. And it turned out that it was our next door neighbor, and he has Alzheimer's, and he had gotten lost and ended up in our house. And so I wrote a little bit about that in this essay, but I also wrote about this precept in this book about what our lives are about. And it's this philosophy that says our entire life is terror management. And it is the terror of thinking about our own mortality. And that everything that we have in our lives is a device to stop us from thinking about our own death.
Very so timely, everything Todd.
From Yeah, everything from God to baseball to you know, watching TV, all of these institutions, all of these ideas is to stop us from thinking about our own mortality.
Death avoidance.
Yeah, death avoidance.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, man.
Yeah, it's a hugely it's not written like a bestseller, but it is a hugely interesting book that you two at the very least might enjoy.
When you say that it's not written like a bestseller, you mean it's not like easy reading. It's like dense.
Listening to a lecture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So there, I read that book, and then sort of related to that, I reread a book that I did an event for that some of you might have come to because I saw some familiar names in the audience. As some of you may know, I actually host another show, a radio show.
Competitive
a radio show called Open
We
Book.
Should have made you sign a clause, a non-competition clause.
So I, on local public radio in the desert, I host a radio show called Open Book, where me and another person, Maggie Downs, interview authors. And on that show, I refer to this show as my vastly more popular show.
Good, very good.
Yeah, because it is. But anyway, Maggie's got a brand new book out. It just came out this week. It's called Braver Than You Think. It is her memoir, and it's the story of her going on a trip around the world, completing her mother's bucket list. Her mother was at home in Ohio, dying of Alzheimer's, and Maggie takes this trip around the world, doing all the things that her mother wanted to do before she died. And it's a heartbreaking book, of course, and it's also a neat reminder that we used to be able to leave our houses and go places and do interesting things and
I know,
meet
that's
interesting
what
people.
Sort of like live vicariously for everybody. Everybody's going to be making like their post-pandemic bucket lists right now, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there's all these things where she's in weird places, like packed tight into crowds, and I'm like, are they wearing masks? Like, what's happening?
Exactly.
And it's a real bit of dissonance, you know? Like when you read these things, you know, only a couple months into this. But anyway, Braver Than You Think. It's been getting really good reviews everywhere. Maggie is a good friend of mine, and she's friends with Julia, too. I always forget that she knows Julia. And yeah. I think she's met Ryder.
Yeah, we hung out
a couple times.
Once or twice. Yeah.
Yeah. But her book just came out. It's a lot of fun. It's a little heartbreaking. But if you've got some wanderlust right now, Braver Than You Think will help you feel like you're not at home. And so I recommend it highly.
That's great.
That sounds great. I want to go next because I have the opposite recommendation.
Cool.
So I started this book over Christmas. I bought it on a whim at a bookstore. It's called The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit. It's a really short nonfiction book, and I just looked it up. You get the sense that it was originally like an Outside magazine or a GQ article, but the subject's so good that
I read it. I read that essay. I thought we didn't do an episode about it. I thought we did an episode. No,
I have some vague memory of us talking about it.
We talked about it maybe, or maybe I brought it up in a revisit or something.
Or maybe when I had just bought it, I talked about it, but I hadn't finished it yet. But I just finished it. It's about a guy who wandered into the woods for 27 years and then was forced to come out. And I don't want to say too much about it because it's short and that would just take away the feeling of actually going and reading it. But it's it's so bizarre because all I can think about is like this poor dude. He's been dragged into the world and now we have this going on. And he was totally right.
Like, see?
Yeah. And
except
the other...
his problem is he had to keep breaking into people's houses to feed himself. It wasn't like he was a self-sustaining hermit. He was like a thieving hermit who was like creepily moving through the wilderness.
A thieving hermit. Is there anything worse than a thieving hermit?
A thieving hobo.
And
that's what the next Babysitter's Club is going to be about. I think there's a
thieving hermit
in our neighborhood.
Well, the other thing that I went back to, I wanted to tell you guys about was, this is so just me being in my house too much. I was just sitting on the couch one day and I was like, Lumberjanes, remember that? And I within 2 minutes, I had ordered like 4 more of them on Amazon on my phone. Like, too enabled. So I've been whipping through these Lumberjanes comics, which is just, it feels like as an adult with really no reason to read these things, it feels like absolute indulgence popcorn reading, which it is, because I can read them in about 45 minutes. Comic books with a 10-year-old girl audience. But they're just so delightful and fun, and I wanted to like bring them up again in case listeners hadn't heard that episode or were looking for something like that or have kids who want something. So, quick recap on Lumberjanes. It's a story about girls. It's a comic book about girls who go to camp together and they find like crazy. The one I just read was about rock and roll mermaids in the lake.
That's awesome.
Wait, you don't just say rock and roll mermaids and then keep going
like
on.
Mermaids who have a band?
Their band had broken up and the Lumberjanes had to heal the rips.
Help them get back
in
together.
So it was like a Fleetwood Mac situation.
Yeah. Just really delightful. And I guess I'm in an outdoorsy mood.
Is it an acoustic band?
No, they had all kinds of
gear. I'm assuming it's a cappella.
You really got to suspend your disbelief here and go with it.
So is this do they only write siren songs that bring people, that make them drown? They lure sailors to their death?
Jesus Christ.
One of the big punchlines is that their music is horrible. That came up right towards the end. Okay. But it was fun reading. And I guess now that I'm talking about those two things at the same time, I'm like reading a lot of outdoorsy stuff. I don't want to read about people like eating in their houses.
No.
Except for Middlemarch, which is all people and furniture and people
so
and furniture.
So much furniture. My God.
And I guess I have one more thing like to bring up. So my biggest parenting hack lately is I've been listening to audiobooks while hanging out with my daughter. Not while actively playing with her, but while like taking a walk or cooking or something. I'm just like, I don't want to hear you talk. I don't want to hear me think. Audiobook.
I would prefer amazing. The disembodied voice of a Robert Ludlum character.
Yes. It
you,
is actually
fruit of my loin.
It's
oh my God,
weird.
I totally
because
understand.
I've been listening to these. I've been listening to the J.K. Rowling pseudonym mysteries, which are
oddly
incredibly violent.
Yeah, they're quite good.
They're really good.
Oh, they're really violent?
Yeah.
Yes, very, very violent.
Yeah.
So
I should get into those.
They're good.
Vega's like, here's my pound puppy, and it's like a woman's leg is being sent in the mail. but they eat like amazing pub food throughout, and I've become enraged because all the descriptions of these drinks, like cold pints and delicious fish and chips, it's becoming upsetting. So I think I might have to stop.
You know what? A good sort of comp for her pseudonym fiction is Tana French. Like,
I like her.
Yeah,
too.
I like Tana
not,
French.
Not dissimilar to each other.
All right. Well, my revisit is not a recommendation.
Oh.
Because no, but there's a good reason. Because we have spent way too much time on this podcast talking about David Foster Wallace.
Right.
So I think the only thing more insufferable than Infinite Jest is people recommending Infinite Jest and saying you have to read it. So I'm not true. Going to say that, but I wanted to bring it up because I've been having conversations with a lot of my friends and about Zoom exhaustion, about how over video calls, you know, it's like, and how we went through this period where it was like, man, video calls are cool. Like we could have hangouts. So like my wife and I would, you know, have drinks with friends, you know, or wine, you know, virtually, or we even had like a virtual birthday gathering where, you know,
I went to a wedding.
You went to it, right. So there was like that first period where all of that was really like cool and sort of exciting and seemed like, and then even for my son who was doing FaceTime with friends from preschool. But then we all like turned it off. Like we all like went through a turn where it was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I've taken to like my friends just saying like, hey, look, do you want to just have a phone conversation? And so like, I'm like, we can still have a drink together, but it'll just be a regular phone conversation. And like every time I've mentioned that, everybody's been like, yes, thank God, I don't want to have to do another Zoom thing. And so what this made me think of is that there is this passage in Infinite Jest that is like a lot of Infinite Jest, just, you know, incredibly bizarre diatribe that has nothing to do with the plot of the book, but that is really insightful or has some sort of funny satire to it. And there's a section in Infinite Jest where he describes, do you guys remember this? Did you ever read it? Or do you know about this section?
I read it,
but I don't remember I don't know what you're going to talk about.
Okay. So he predicted that because Infinite Jest takes place in the future,
right.
I guess 20 years from the 90s or somewhere. You don't know the exact year because the years have been, branded. They're not numbers anymore. But there's a section where he predicted video conferencing, first of all, like video talking, but then also predicted our exhaustion with it. And it is amazing. I just reread it because I've been talking about this. Here's a passage. There's a version of it online, an excerpt online, so we'll link to it on our episode. It turned out that there was something terribly stressful about visual telephone interfaces that hadn't been stressful at all about voice-only interfaces. Videophone consumers seemed suddenly to realize that they'd been subject to an insidious but wholly marvelous delusion about conventional voice-only telephony. They'd never noticed it before, the delusion. It's like it was so emotionally complex that it could be countenanced only in the context of its loss. good old traditional audio-only phone conversations allowed you to presume that the person on the other end was paying complete attention to you while also permitting you not to have to pay anything even close to complete attention to her. And I think that that is so true, because what's exhausting about Zoom is that you're able to see people cleaning their nails or, you know, gazing off into space while you're talking. And then at the same time, you have to present a face that is like you're listening or engaging or having like a normal face-to-face conversation when you're not in the presence of the person. And it's just by the end of a Zoom conversation, you're tired in a way that you just aren't from a phone conversation.
Right.
So this is my bookshelf is read this whole thing because it's amazing. He even goes into they have digital technology to alter their faces. He predicted that, and the way he does it is they have to actually wear masks. So he goes in this whole thing about whether people wanted to wear it. Basically, after like 18 months, they just exhaust, you know, people, the video conferencing went back to regular phone conferences. And I think that we're going through that in a lot of ways. Like, people are just getting on the phone for meetings now, and or maybe not. Maybe we'll push through it. But I found it amazing. Like, the second I had that thought of like, there's this weird thing happening, I was like, didn't David Foster Wallace write something about this in 1996 or whatever?
You know what's weird is, so for my job at UC Riverside, there's a meeting that I have to go to every month where it's all the chairs and directors of graduate programs and undergraduate programs. And so there's like 60 people get into a room and we have this meeting with our dean. And it's like, even the dean knows that it's a really long, boring meeting. And like, you know, everyone shows up and like, if someone asks a question, like, it's an entire room of really smart people who are just like, the fuck's wrong with you? Why did you ask a question? Yeah. We had 10 more minutes. Get the fuck out of here. Why are you talking? So at any rate, right after this all happened and we had our first meeting of all these people on Zoom, everyone showed up. And everyone was full video, and everyone was talking, and everyone was engaged. I just had this same meeting last week, and not a single person turned on their video.
Yeah.
Not a single person.
They just,
it was just
had their like, name up.
Yeah, my video was on, and I was like, oh, well, I guess we're not doing video not doing anymore.
So they were muting themselves and making dinner while they were sitting.
Yeah, like everyone was muted. No one was talking. And then, like, so you keep your headphones on in case someone says something where you have to, like, be aware of it. And so, like, I'd be listening, like, make sure they don't say my name. If they say my name, be like, I'm ready. And I was sitting here. I didn't leave. I was right here. I was always right here. But only when someone actually had a question or were called upon or needed to talk about something would they then turn their video back on.
Yeah.
It was, from a sociological standpoint, it was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. My wife did two panels yesterday for a film festival. And she said it was just a panel on women filmmakers and then a panel on a Q&A for her short film. She said it was so bizarre. She was like, because she, you know, is usually fine with those things. She actually enjoys them. But she was like so nervous about it. She's like, I don't know what it's going to be like on the, you know.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's super weird.
So I've done a few improv shows. And it's weird because you can't hear the audience. Right. Yeah. Just like,
which is such a big part of the feedback.
Assume their floating little heart or whatever on Facebook Live represents something real. Well, it's just awful.
On Friday night, my favorite singer, Jason Isbell, he released his new record, and he and his wife did a live show in an empty ballroom in Nashville. And you could be, they had these giant screens all around the ballroom of people on Zoom watching. And then at the end of each song, at the end of each song, they'd unmute everyone so people could clap and cheer and everything. But then when he'd start to sing, they'd mute them all back up again.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it was some like Minority Report shit. It was
did
really
it work?
Weird.
I mean, did it feel like you went to a concert?
Well, I mean, like, I sat there and listened and it was cool and he was talking and the songs were great, and but it wasn't like the tickets I have for his show in July in Santa Barbara that there's no fucking way I'm going to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, it was unusual. It was unusual. But, you know, I feel really bad. I mean, Julia knows this more than anyone. Like, these people that make their livings as live performers, the fuck are they going to do?
Yep. I It's, did we talk about this last week? I can't remember.
We might have, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think we talked about it on air. I think it was an off-air discussion about the future of our industries. Jesus.
Yeah, it's funny because there's so much, rightfully, there's so much discussion and various guidance on businesses reopening. But nothing can tell you what customers are going to do. There needs to be emotional guidance somehow, or it's just going to be so bananas. I just, it's so overwhelming to think about. If we open too early, people will be mad. If we open too late, people will, you know, forget about us, or they'll be out of the habit of going to live shows. If we do what we always did, that will be comforting to some people and horrifying to other people. If we change what we did, it will be the opposite. So, I don't know. Nobody knows anything.
Have you guys started doing any of your classes online?
We have slowly converted to doing that. It's fine. It's a whole new... I'm not going to say it doesn't work. It definitely works, but... it's a completely different product. It's a different business. And, you know, financially speaking, like, it's definitely worth less. So we charge less, you know, like, you're not getting the amenities of like a space and a community. And, you know, so it's a little cheaper. And I think people out there, like, one thing I would love the listeners to understand, people, there's like this big flurry of like, ooh, do stuff online, or like buy a gift card, or send tips to random waiters. Like, that's all cool. But like, we have made so little money that way. Like, for all the people giving, like, shouting us out and trying to support us, like, it is just not the same. It's not going to keep anybody afloat. Like, people need their real business models. Like, even there have been a lot of discussions this week about, you know, restaurants are expected to all operate at half capacity or less, and it's like, they can they rely on those jam-packed days. So I'll be fascinated to see, you know, what happens.
I mean, luckily human beings need live theater and live concerts more than anything, you know. Like, that is, I think the of that sort of entertainment area, it's movie theaters that are going to take the biggest hit through this.
Yeah.
Because why do that again? Do you know what I mean? Like, it was always a sort of ritual, like a bizarre 20th century ritual that was already kind of fading. I love it. I mean, for me, it was the equivalent of church, you know, going to worship at the movies. And I think that there's a certain type of cinephile who's always going to need that and want that. But that is rarer, I think. If you can have it at home, you're not going to risk your life for it. But getting in a room of people that are dancing and singing along to a music, or seeing live actors act something out, like, those, that's just age old and human. Like, it's, that's never going to go away. You know, like, that community, like, we need that community. So yeah, it's just, can these companies, your company included, weather the year and a half, 2 years that it's probably going to be before we're all comfortable doing it.
Julia just moved to Wisconsin. Because they're just Thunderdome in Wisconsin.
So, you know what I actually think is going to happen? Here's my prediction, just from my own observations, is everything will move outside. Like, people are starting to have a much greater American connection with the outdoors than we did before. And any outside version of anything is going to come back first. So your lawn seats at your local Giant stadium, that'll be great. That'll be the first thing that people feel brave enough to do. Drive-in movie theaters. If I had $1 million, I would build a drive-in movie theater right now. You know, how it would happen. And we are starting to get requests for online stuff. And then summer in Connecticut is already a time where people are doing little things outdoors. So we've had people be like, do you guys want to do a mini improv show outdoors? And we will do that. But now I'm like, okay, I got to get everybody in a mindset, like, we got to buy new sound equipment and figure out how to do like a good outdoor show. That's what's going to happen. I'm sure that's what's going to happen.
I agree, because I've been thinking about my MFA residencies. So we had to cancel our in-person residency in June. We're going to do, the plan is to still have one in December, but my idea is we can do all of it outside. Mm-hmm. The weather in the desert in December is beautiful. And we could do every single thing outside. And I think people would just feel safer that way. And I would feel safer that way. Because it's not just like, what does everyone else need to feel safe? It's like, what the fuck do I need to feel safe too? Like, like I could say we're going to do these things. But if I don't feel safe, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Oh, God. I'm just going to sit at home and read about death, immortality, and the meaning of life.
That sounds good.
Over and over and over again.
I'm going to read about camping.
Yeah. God. I'm going to go around the world on the bucket list of my dead mother's life. Which actually, I think I pretty much have already done.
Literary Disco is produced and edited by Justin Alvarez for Lit Hub Radio. You can reach out to us directly on Twitter, @LiteraryDisco. Happy reading, everybody. Thanks for listening.